This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to the last Talk Back Gardening for January. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb, and good morning, listeners.
Now, we've got a bit of a focus on veggies. Sarah Mitchell's going to join us shortly from Diggers Adelaide and talk through, I guess, what some of the impacts of heat are on our veggies, what problems might even roll down the track from the heat. So,
absolutely, absolutely. And it's all very well to say, you know, you need to shade things. Well, that's okay, but then if you get busy or you head away, sometimes a few things go wrong while you're away. So I would love to make sure that we can, you know, just talk about some of the pests that may be challenging your veggies. You might even not know that you've got them, but you might know the symptoms and also some of the responses plants like lettuce to heat. So let's have a focus on veggies.
Great. So call in now if you've got a veggie question on 1300 222 891 to speak to Sophie and Sarah. Can I just mention too on the text line, Ralph from McGill says it was great to hear earlier in the week of the award of OAM to the late Walter Duncan, who was the most amazing South Australian rosarian. And thank you to Ralph who sent through a link to the Stock Journal article. But that was really lovely to see that recognition, wasn't it, Sophie?
Absolutely. And yeah. I didn't get to hear the interview, but I believe there was a chat on air with Kay too, so that was gorgeous.
That's lovely. Now, 1300 222 891 is the number to talk veggies, and the person you're going to be talking it with and along with Sophie Thompson is Sarah Mitchell from Diggers Adelaide. Welcome to the studio, Sarah. Great to have you here.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, Sophie. How are you?
Good. How did you survive the heat? Or more importantly, how did your veggies survive the heat?
Well, I hid inside in the dark and mostly, my veggies did okay. They did okay. There's a bit of burn about. There's certainly a lot of wilting, but, you know, that's also to be expected for this time of year.
Now, Sarah, I had to go away for virtually 6 days. And when I got home, while things had been watered, I had a few pest problems. So my tomatoes had developed tomato russet mite because of the dry heat. Now, I'm sure I'm not alone in that. So for people that don't know, it's when your tomatoes, the lower leaves sort of go brown and daggy and, a little bit spotty. Have you had other people with that issue, Sarah?
I haven't had people come in specifically and say that, but certainly it is an issue at this time of year. And, of course, we know the drier the air is, the more likely we are to get mites. And it's one to watch out for. Look, one of my least favourite things in the garden is earwigs, but apparently earwigs eat mites, which I find difficult to balance myself with my loathing of earwigs, but the work that they do in the garden, and of course they help with composting too. And I'm a dripper
person.
Well, that
I didn't know.
That's one of their favourite food sources apparently. I'm a dripper person and I drip under my mulch for most of my veggie patch most of the time. But as soon as I see mites, I get out the hose and I spray them, and you can almost see them die on the plant. I obviously need to do that first thing in the morning because I want that foliage to dry out again and not to cause fungal issues. But that's my first line of defence. Of course, sometimes the issue gets bigger than that. What do you do when it gets bigger than that, Sophie?
Oh, well, I've never really worried about it. I just pick off the bottom leaves. But you're right. If I had been here, I would have been squirting the hose around the foliage. And also I've noticed that some of my beans have got mites too, because we had temperatures in the mid-40s here while I was away. And so that dry air, even under shade cloth, it's the dry air. Down the track, I'm interested in getting a misting system set up in my shaded walled gardens so that I can create a bit more, so there's a bit more humidity around, and then that will help to reduce the mite issue.
Yes, yes, it's a fine line, isn't it? Obviously, at this time of year, where I got 100 drops on my rain on my roof this morning. Of course, big, fat, juicy ones that made a lot of noise, and it was so exciting. I ran outside to have a look, but of course, not a single drop made it into my rainwater tank. But then, of course, we're heading into autumn, and while we're going to have a dry February, it's also fairly inevitable that, depending on how we water, that we do start to get powdery mildew and things with all of our cucurbits as well. Yeah, it's a fine line when it comes to watering, but doing it first thing in the morning when you know that it's going to be a dry day is a really great solution.
And the other thing that I, you know, happens all the time, I actually have, you know, I wanted to have some beautiful lettuce for something that's happening here on Monday. And, of course, my lettuces decided to bolt to seed while I was away because, you know, lettuces don't like to dry out. And they didn't dry out, but the temperature was so hot. So, you know, one of the things that sometimes is triggered by hot weather is plants change their form. You know, plants that were doing beautifully suddenly stop.
Yeah, really good point. And of course, some plants, it doesn't matter how well watered the root system is, they're going to wilt anyway, and certainly lettuce is going to go bitter once it's had a real hot spell like that. And there's not a lot you can do about it when it's over 40 degrees. But certainly, if it's heirloom lettuce, of course, you can save the seed.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I was I visited a station out at Kimber. So, you know, we're talking extreme temperatures. And she was saying how what she does is when she lets her lettuces go to seed, she always keeps the seed of the varieties that bolt last. So they have the most tolerance to heat. So she can actually select what's better suited.
That's clever.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's exactly what you're doing when you're saving seed, is trying to save the seed that is clearly showing that it's really loving your environment and that it's you know, showing the traits which you want to grow again next year. And every year you do that, you improve the variety that you're growing for your particular environment.
Absolutely. Now tell me, Sarah, what's your view on shade cloth? Do you have your veggie patch covered in shade cloth?
I don't, but I absolutely advocate for it. I actually use insect netting when I do, and I do have some of it under it. The insect netting I use is white. And of course, that not only shades them, but it also reflects around the light and increases that ambient light, and it just, I find that when I do that, it actually increases the growth under the shade cloth. It's not just shading them from the very hot weather, but it's actually improving that environment under there, and yeah, my much better growth underneath white shade cloth. I also use nanonet curtains, I say, that I get from the salvo sometimes, and make teepees and wrap them in gorgeous, gorgeous old lace curtains that people aren't mostly going to use in their house anymore. And that makes a good temporary fix too. But my garden has somewhat more shade than it originally did when I put the veggie patch there, because all of our trees around have benefited wildly from the amount of water that I've put on my veggie patch, and they're much larger and I get quite a lot more shade than I used to. So I'm walking the fine line between enough sunshine and too much shade, and putting more shade cloth on the top is possibly, for me personally, not such a priority.
That's really fascinating. Can I just come back to mites for a moment, Sophie and Sarah? Phil from Woodside says, you don't tend to get mites or whitefly if you overhead water your tomatoes. What's your view on that, Soph?
Well, whitefly on tomatoes typically only occurs if you've got soft, sappy growth. So if you grow your tomatoes under, say, shade cloth all year round, so for example, you know, over summer having shade cloth is really important, but if you had shade cloth there in spring, the growth on your tomatoes would be soft and sappy, and whitefly loves soft, sappy growth. So really, whitefly, I think, is measured by, you know, how sturdy the plant's growth is. But I would imagine that the mites wouldn't like the overhead watering because mites like dry air and not humidity. What do you think, Sarah?
Oh, I quite agree, which is, of course, why some of us have quite a mite problem at this time of year because most of us, well, lots of us are on drippers and there's been nothing but warm, dry air for quite some time now. So they have the opportunity to thrive, but a good and well-grown, healthy plant is the most robust and most likely to survive against things which are willing to take advantage of something that's not so robust in the garden, perhaps. Mm. Yeah, keeping them strong, growing. It all comes down to garden prep, doesn't it, Sophie? It's all about how you set up your garden in the first place, how you prep your soil before you do your planting, and then how you get those roots down nice and deep as early as possible so that when this hot weather comes, it's just nowhere near as much of an issue.
Absolutely. Mm. I love it. So most of my veggies are in wicking beds apart from at the moment some pumpkins and squash that are in, you know, open beds out in the full sun. So, and the wicking beds means the plants can take the water they want when they want them. And that reduces a lot of the pests, but the mites just in the last week because of the dry air have become a problem.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder on a place like yours, Sophie, how the mites even get there, you know.
Oh, I know. We're in the middle of nowhere, literally.
Nowhere. Yeah, and absolutely. Yet they turn up. They just turn up when they think it's an opportune moment, don't they? Yeah.
We are talking veggies. If you've got a vegetable-related question, you've got two people here happy to help you. Sophie Thompson, as always, and our special guest, Sarah Mitchell from Diggers Adelaide. Call in now on 1300 222 891. We love your comments too on the text line on 0467 922 891.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We are talking veggies in the heat or with some insect problems, anything at all vegetable related. Call in now on 1300 222 891. Sophie Thompson is here as always, but also Sarah Mitchell from Diggers Adelaide is here. Just a quick question from, I can't see who it's from, says, I can't call, I'm cooking, but what causes zucchinis to be misformed? They are fully formed at stalk end, but not filling out toward the flower end.
Or I would wonder whether that's a little pest that has bothered it when it's just still forming and has had a little nibble or a little suck on, you know, just below the flower when it's pollinating, and then as it's grown, that deformed, you know, little nibbled on bit doesn't grow into the regular shape of a regular zucchini. I wonder whether it's happening on several or just one, but that would be my hot tip, is that it's just happening very early in the stages when it's, just when it's flowering.
Sophie?
I agree. It sounds, you know, some sort of insect damage that has triggered that, but we, you know, without knowing if it's just one or multiples.
Lots of lines free on 1300 222 891. Karen has called in from the Barossa. You're getting some good growth, Karen, but not many veggies. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a hoop house which is open both ends, covered in 50% shade cloth, and I've got germination. I've got massive growth on zucchini plants. I have got sunset runner beans, squash plants. All have grown, all have flowered, and there's no pollination. So there's lots of little zucchinis that are just dying off. You know, they start to grow, die off. The beans, the flowers, they've flowered beautifully. Flowers just fall off. And the same with the squash.
Have you ever tried hand pollination?
I haven't.
Oh, I suppose in a tunnel it's a little bit harder in there, isn't it? But
it is open ended.
Okay.
And I have four beehives here.
Oh, exciting! Oh, that's very cool. Look,
so,
it's
yeah,
yeah.
It,
When you say
busy on the gum trees, so yeah, great. Maybe not on the vegetables.
Yeah, and when you say shade cloth, what colour is the shade cloth?
It's beige.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's 50, one of the least. One of the best options. It's not as fabulous as white, but gee, it's much better than black and green. Look, it when it gets very hot, lots of plants go into survival mode and really don't get back into production mode until the weather drops again, so the temperature drops again, because, they're just trying to survive. And even though you're under shade cloth, which is the very best scenario.
And in wicking beds.
Yeah, and in wicking beds, great. And lots of things also don't go into food production until they get to a certain length. They might produce flowers and so on, but not actually be in a position to turn those flowers into fruit until they've got enough growth on them so that they've got enough support for those fruit once they're forming.
Right. Well, the beans are about 1.5 metres tall.
Oh, great.
They're touching the top. But yes, the flowers, and then they just all fall off.
Mm. And you've done all of the right things with in terms of soil amendments and what it is that you've...
Worm juice, seaweed, tonic, compost in there, the works.
And mulch on top.
Mm.
Yes, yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, and now because they've burnt... with the beans, I'm just wondering, do I cut them back because they're the perennial ones?
No, not yet.
Just leave them?
Yeah, right. Because that is shading the foliage which is underneath. As I say that, I'm thinking, we're heading into just plain old 30s, it looks to me, for the forecast going forward, mostly 30 for the next... month, really, not much below that. But really, mostly that's prime growing time. I think within about 2 weeks, you're going to be starting to see some really great starts to fruit on your vines.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
There must be 10 or 15 zucchinis that have all just, shriveled again at the end. As the previous caller said, they start to grow and then it just, and that just looks like a pollination issue.
Yeah, look, I've had a few of those sorts of things with my squash as well. Ones in different parts of the garden that are in different conditions have soldiered on, but some of them in the hotter parts of the garden have just aborted fruit, really, in order to just get through the hot weather. One thing I was going to say about your compost, that's really very fabulous and nothing is better than home compost. Mm. But when you're making your compost, what are you making it with?
Generally garden garden waste and chook manure. Great. And chook straw.
Great. Okay. My point being that when you make compost, what you put into the compost is key, because if you are only making compost from the things that you have in your garden, the nutrients that you are putting into that are only the nutrients that your garden has access to naturally. And so bringing in things from the outside, certainly chook manure is a fantastic amendment, but adding different things in from different sources adds different nutrients that then your plant have access to. So certainly it's just like eating dinner. The more variety you have, the healthier you'll be, because you have access to many more nutrients.
Cow manure?
Absolutely.
Is that a good one?
Well, yeah. Right. If you've got access to it, not an enormous amount, depends on the size of your compost pile, but, even adding things like a bit of molasses, which is really good at feeding the good bacteria of your compost pile. I grow nasturtiums and things because they're really great at mining nutrients from the soil that other plants have difficulty getting up, and then just specifically to add to my compost pile, because then that makes those nutrients more bioavailable to the other plants in my garden.
Sophie, did you want to add anything?
No, it sounds fantastic. Great coverage there, Sarah.
Got two amazing S's here joining us, Sophie and Sarah. If you want to grab them, you're going to have to be quick. 1-300-222-891. Thank you very much for calling in, Karen.
Thank you.
Thank you. And staying in the Barossa, Diane is also there. And your tomatoes aren't sweet enough, Diane.
No, they're not sweet enough for me. They're very healthy, and I've got an awful lot on the bush, or bushes. I've got two cherry tomatoes. One's a Tomato, the other one's just a plain cherry, I think it's called. And they're lovely and big, and there's heaps on there, and they seem to be growing well, but they're just not sweet. I'm not quite sure what I need to do.
Yeah, there you go. And what kind of conditions are you growing them in, Diane?
Oh, they're in the soil. They're actually in an old compost heap, what was a compost bed last year.
Oh, wow.
And we put them in there. So I think they're healthy enough, but I also added organic fertiliser and gypsum when I planted them. Mm. And I added more potash when they started flowering. And I've been giving a fortnightly soluble liquid fertiliser fortnightly to try and get them sweeter, but they're not sweet.
Yeah. So, what about your sunshine hours?
They're in the corner of the garden, so they've got tin fencing on two sides, one side being the east, so they probably don't get sun until 10:30, 11, and then they have sun then they get shaded in the mid to late afternoon from trees on the other side.
Mm. The two things that will affect sweetness of, there are many things that affect, the two major things that will affect the sweetness of your tomatoes are the variety, and Tomato is obviously a very good one, and I'm not sure about the other one, the major contributor to the flavour, but sunshine is the thing which will make the difference to how sweet something is going to be. And I've literally had Tomatoes producing beautifully in the middle of winter because that's Tomato. It just keeps on keeping on. But because the sunshine hours are dramatically different, they don't taste great at all. So it seems incongruous in this weather to think about sunshine, but some tomatoes will grow well regardless, but if they don't have enough sunshine, then that might actually affect that too. And depending on watering, we want tomato roots, we want all roots of vegetables to be going down nice and deep so that they are protected from the hot soil on the surface. But if they're not, because they're being watered really regularly, sometimes that makes the fruit larger and more juicy and fabulous, but it also reduces the concentration of sugars in the fruit, and therefore they're just not quite as delicious.
Okay, well, maybe I am watering too much. Well, I certainly have been watering daily in this hot weather.
Yeah.
And I was probably watering maybe every second day or third day prior to the hot weather.
Yeah, look, I'm guilty of it too. Ah, it's hot, quick, get out and water my garden before it gets too hot. You want to water really, really deeply, and then you want to mulch, and you want to make sure that those roots are getting down, and they're not going to go down if they're being watered every day. And that means that, they don't require as much water, and then you're going to concentrate your sugars a bit more.
Yeah, sure. I did have a lot of foliage on them up until probably 10 days ago, and because I didn't know about the sunshine, and I thought, oh, well, they're not getting enough sun. So I've reduced the foliage, the canopy, so that they actually receive more sun. So now they are getting a lot more sun than they probably were. Will they now get juicy, or the ones that are still green?
Sweet. Yeah, they may well. They may well. Yeah.
Sophie, did you want to weigh in at all? Sophie's just sitting back and having a listen.
I'm loving it. I'm loving it. And I'm thinking, oh, that's why my Tomatoes didn't taste so good in winter. You're right. It's because of sunshine. Fantastic, Sarah.
There you go, Diane. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you.
Jeff in McGill is calling about compost in relation to veggies. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. I create compost for my vegetable garden and dig it in. I've never used, and it's composed of vegetable waste and the shredded tree branches and the rest. I've never added in grass cutting because I thought they lacked nutrients and just going to add bulk. What's your thinking on that?
They certainly do add the nutrient of nitrogen, which is a macronutrient rather than a micronutrient, and that really helps to break down the other brown stuff. If you're putting in branches and dead dried leaves and gum, all sorts of things, then that's the thing that's going to speed up your compost. But you do need to balance it with brown. So, yeah, lawn clippings are really very fabulous. They are the thing that you use to speed it up. But there's no point in pouring them in if you're then not going to add the brown, because you'll just make a gluey, sludgy mess that isn't aerated and is not as fabulous.
Can I just say,
I also added cow manure too.
Great.
Yeah, yeah. But it does depend on the type of lawn, because I am, you know, if you've got couch or kikuyu and you put that in your compost, you could well be adding a weed issue into your compost.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
You know, if it's soft leaf buffalo or something like that, it's really manageable. But if it's one of the running grasses like couch or kikuyu, I am so wary of that stuff.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because certainly once they get in, they take off, and then you've got a big job.
Jeff, thank you and good luck with that compost. Just coming back to our texter with the zucchini problem, has got back to us and said it is multiple zucchinis that are misshaped, wondering if it was something to do with the heat, pollination or watering, and lots of texts on it. George says, if a zucchini is not filled out at the flower end, it may not have been pollinated properly. Usually these zucchini don't get much bigger than 10 centimetres in my experience. Sangeeta at Linden Park says, I always hand pollinate zucchini and cucumbers, even though there are plenty of bees in my garden. Somehow they prefer other flowers over veggies. And a very long text, I'm not going to be able to read it all, says the root cause may be insect damage at pollination. However, the symptoms described are certainly a pollination problem. It is seeds within the fruit that regulate hormones in fruit development. And if you have malfunctioning coronation through insect damage, heat, water, stress or nutritional factors, the seeds don't develop and require hormones for normal fruit growth, don't operate. And finally, Jordan at Golden Grove on zucchini says they've just started fruiting. I can't call, but there's a white spot on it. What might it be? Any ideas quickly?
I agree with all of the stuff about pollination. Absolutely, that's the long story. A white spot would be a fungus.
Yeah, okay. So, Jordan, that's all we can give it at the moment. Thanks for sending that text through. Sophie Thompson, hasn't it been lovely having Sarah Mitchell in from Diggers Adelaide and providing great advice re-veggies?
Absolutely, and there's going to be lots of people excited because we're now in for a bit of cooler weather, and we'll hold you at the word that, you know, it's going to be a mild month, Sarah.
Look, thanks, Sarah, for coming, and we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for your expertise.
My pleasure. Lovely to be in.
Thank you, Sarah Mitchell from Diggers Adelaide, which you can always catch at the Adelaide Botanic Gardens or online.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning. Big welcome to you to Saturday Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, listeners.
1-300-222-891 is the number to call to get some advice from Sophie on any gardening question that you have. I have a couple of ABC gardening magazines to give away later if you'd like to get ready for it. I'll do one by phone, one by text. The phone line, of course, 1-300-222-891. The text line 0467922891. We need your full name and postal address on that when we give you the cue to call. Let's dive straight into Talkback Gardening with Anne in Inman Valley. Now, what's happened to your lettuce, Anne? Good morning.
Good morning, Deb and Sophie. The lettuce I thought was appearing to go to seed. I'd been away, so it's now standing at about nearly 2 foot tall. There's mm-hmm. the three different varieties that you get in a punnet. And yep. the others have gone, and I just noticed that the red one has finished, but the other one has still got green leaves on it, this tall, and it's got all their fluffy seed on the top. It's just been sitting there for months doing absolutely nothing. And I'm just wondering, is it actually in seed or...?
Well, it will eventually. So, I mean, the reality is if you go to eat those leaves, they're usually pretty bitter. Now, one of the tips with lettuce is that you always pick lettuce before the sun gets up in the morning. And the reason why is because lettuce is Lactuca, that's the family, which means milk. So lettuces have that white, sappy excretion when you break off a leaf. And that is the bitter component. So if you pick lettuce first thing in the morning, it's when it's sweetest, and then you, say, put it in the fridge for your salad that night. By the time it goes to seed, even if you pick it in the morning, it's still really bitter. Because the whole process has changed. So I would just wait and let it do its thing. The thing I was explaining that I saw outside of Kimber is she harvests the seed of the ones that bolt last. So they're the ones that have taken the most heat, the most challenges before they are triggered to seed. And if she continues to do that, she will actually, you know, year in, year out, she will end up with lettuce that is more heat tolerant and less likely to bolt than something that she buys all the time, you know, as a new punnet. So it's a really interesting process. But just wait. And if, as long as you don't need the bed, the challenge with my new place is that I haven't got a lot of bed space yet. And so I tend to be desperate to get the bed zhuzhed up to have another crop put in. I haven't been letting anything go to seed out here. But in time, I'll get, you know, the balance happening.
Does it really take that long?
Well, it can do, you know, they look really pretty in the whole process. You know, they're these amazing rosettes. It's just they're not edible.
Yeah, no. Okay.
All the best with that, Anne.
Thank you, Anne. I love zhuzhed up. Sophie, well, that's a great expression.
Zhuzh for me usually involves manure, you know.
That's great. Mari is in the southeast with a buffalo grass question. Good morning, Mari.
Good morning. Hi, thanks, Sophie. We've got a lovely Kaikuya Cooch lawn, but there's buffalo grass gradually encroaching into it. And I'm just wondering if there's any way I can kill the buffalo grass without damaging the rest of the lawn.
Oh, they're all running grasses, so that's going to be really tricky. So this is the old-fashioned buffalo, the coarse one.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Is there any way you can hand remove it where you see it?
Well, I have tried, but it's really a bit overwhelming. I think it needs more than that.
Yeah. So as far as I know, there aren't selective herbicides that can pick out, you know, one running grass over another. The other thing would be that you actually spot spray with herbicide and, you'll get a little bit of collateral damage on the nearby cooch or kukuyu, but it will come back. We know that. Whereas if you can actually hammer the buffalo, that would be the best. Or, you know, even in, you know, like an old, even painting it on. I have had that happen in a previous buffalo lawn where there was a little bit, a previous lawn where there was a bit of a different lawn come in, but it was only a small area, so it was doable. And if this is a big area, this might not be as manageable, Mari.
Okay.
Oh, well, I wish I had a magic wand.
I was hoping you might have a magic chemical we could just spray on and kill the baddies.
Oh, I know. Wouldn't that be good? I mean, Peter Gers would tell you to move house. You just know that, don't you?
Well, I might have to consider that. Okay, thanks, Sophie.
Thanks, Mari.
See you then.
Irene is in Seaton. Now, is it too hot to prune your fruit trees? Hello, Irene.
Good morning. How are you?
Great,
thank you. How can we help you?
I've got a apricot tree that I grew from a kernel, and I had 20 fruit on it this year.
And were they yummy?
Oh, beautiful.
Awesome.
But now I don't want it to grow too big because I'm getting too old to get up a ladder and things like that.
Yep, absolutely.
So I'm thinking of pruning it as high as my arms will reach Is that okay? And is it too hot to do it now?
Okay, so no, summer pruning apricots is actually the perfect time to be doing them. So you can take up to 30% of the canopy off. So, you know, but bear in mind that if you prune it at the height you want it to be, it's going to grow on top of that. So, yes. You know, as long as you take that into account. But now that, you know, you wouldn't want to do it when it's a 40 degree week. But now that we're having this cooler week, it would be ideal to do that, Irene.
Yes, that's what I was thinking, actually.
Absolutely. Perfect.
Oh, that'll be great. Yes, I'll get stuck into it when it's a bit cooler.
Excellent.
Good on you, Irene.
Yeah.
And stay away from ladders.
Yes.
I certainly do. Not
good.
Worried about that.
Yes.
Well, I think everyone now is saying we want fruit, but we don't want to pick with a ladder. So, you know, just manage your trees so you don't need ladders.
That is the right advice, Sophie. So many serious accidents occur with ladders, and unless you've got someone with you steadying it, then don't go up one for sure. Yeah. Annette is in Alberton. We've got blobs of what?
Oh, this is my favourite question, Annette.
Oh,
describe these blobs.
Well, this is a nearly 2-year-old native garden that has bark chip mulch. And I noticed recently it looks like someone's come along with soft marshmallow and thrown these blobs. They're sort of conical, like a half sphere. And I'm wondering what they are and should I be worried about them?
Okay. Now, the thing I thought you might be describing, I'm now not sure it is, but it's obviously some sort of fungal growth.
Yes.
So you don't worry about that because that just is part of the natural breakdown of the bark chip.
Okay.
But I'm going to give you something to Google. And this has the worst name, so I apologise in advance. Dog vomit slime mold.
Oh.
Okay, so slime mold is this amazing group of organisms that they actually, like, the life in the soil is more intelligent than we understand. So slime molds actually have a hive mind, like as in Star Trek.
It does look like a little hivey type thing, yeah.
Okay, so what happens is they can actually navigate a maze to find a food source. So as they, if it's a slime mold, it will actually change colour a bit. And then eventually it will sort of dissipate. And if you watch closely, the spores go everywhere. It's not harmful. Mm. It's just part of the natural breakdown of that woody mulch. And it's probably occurred because a little bit of moisture, a bit of heat, and it's the right time for that mulch.
Okay.
So it may be a slime mold or it might be one of the many other fungi that occur as part of life. And we don't, you know, don't go eating them. But it's just part of the breakdown of that woody material, and it shows you that you know while you think that is a dead area, you know, not dead area, you've got your plants and then there's a bark chip and you think nothing else, actually it is full of life.
Yes, well, that's excellent news. I mean, the garden looks fantastic, but very strange. One day here, one day not.
Yeah.
Or one day and then one day here. And and at first I thought I saw just a couple, and now it's sort of spread out over the garden. So that's excellent.
Yeah,
so, I'm really glad that the garden.
You know, it may not, because of the shape, it may not be a slime mold, but there are so many other fungal things that it could be. I mean, back in, I think it was November, I joined, I don't know how many people, but let's say there were 800 people at the Adelaide Town Hall to hear a guy, and we paid on average $100 each to hear a guy called Merlin Sheldrake talk about fungi. And we were, you know, for a couple of hours of his performance, you know, we were absolutely spellbound by his description of the life under the soil. And if you want a great book, his book about soil is amazing book. Sorry, his book about fungi.
Okay, well, that's fantastic. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank
Pleasure,
you, Annette.
Thanks, Sophie. Bye, Deb.
Thank you. And just what was the name of that product again, Sophie?
What, the product or the book?
Dog? No, the product.
Oh, the dog vomit slime mold. It's not a product. It's actually a living creature. And I used to get so excited when these developed at my last patch. And, you know, they're just, you know, it's just this amazing creature living in the soil. We take for granted it's there, you know, it's there, and this is the, like, the fruiting body of it. So whether it's that or not, without being able to see what the problem was, but who knows?
Yeah, well, interesting name, that's for sure. Just coming back to the issue of grass, this texter says there is a spray that is used on cricket wickets to keep kikuyu away from the cooch. Talk to your local cricket club with a turf wicket. The grounds person will know what the spray is. So that's interesting.
So whether that will keep buffalo out of cooch and kikuyu.
Exactly. Yeah. And another texter says, for the kikuyu and buffalo question, try the Facebook page for Australian Lawn Fanatics. They are brilliant.
And beautiful.
Yeah, Sophie, if we could just return to the issue of shade, please. Ken at Mount Barker said, my no-shade tomatoes and pumpkins are looking their best. But another texter asked some time ago, why is it that white or beige shading is better than any other colour?
Because it still lets lots of light through. Because if we make something too shaded, we want the light to come in, but we want to reduce the heat. If we make it too dark, what's going to happen is the growth on the vegetables will elongate, stretching for the light. And when it elongates, it becomes soft and sappy, and it's more likely to get pests or diseases. So last week we had Philip Smolt join us while you were away, Deb, and it was a fascinating discussion. And I have always used pale or white shade cloth, but after listening to Philip talk, white shade cloth is actually preferable. You know, I've probably used pale because I've had it from previous gardens, but white shade cloth is preferable because it keeps it lighter. And as Sarah said, it means that you've got more radiant, reflected light within it.
Okay. There you go, Natasha. I hope that answers your question. Very interesting indeed. And now we're going to Michelle in Broken Hill in just a moment, but I have got a couple of ABC gardening magazines to give away, one by phone, one by text. The phone line is 1300 222 891, the text line 0467 922 891. If you're sending a text, can you please do so with your full name and postal address?
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
And speaking of Broken Hill, Michelle is there right now, and you've got a staghorn question, Michelle. Welcome.
Thank you, ladies. Yes, I do have a question. Just wondering what we can do to help it recover from our recent, you know, 5 days of 45 degrees.
You can put a bit of humidity in the air around the plant when we get temperatures like that in the future. So if you've got it in sort of, is it in a shade house or?
It's under a bottle brush tree. It's got a lot of cover, but, it, you know, we've had such hot winds. Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things is if you can be home enough and you go out even with a hose and just squirt it down, because that creates the humidity. Many people are investing in misters. So misters put moisture in the air and that drops the temperature. And so they, you know, if it was in a shade house, I'd tell you to put a mister up. I do know some people have put misters around, you know, sensitive plants. But, you know, really the most important thing is moisture in the air when we have such dry heat. And how you can do that when you live in a place like Broken Hill or live where I am is, you know, is a tough call. But, you know, if that's the most sheltered spot you've got, fantastic. Anything to stop those drying winds ripping the moisture out of it is obviously the best thing to do.
Is there anything we can do? The weather is going to break tomorrow. Is there anything we should give it, a liquid fertiliser or a little boost, or just see how it goes?
Well, no, I would do any of that. You know, I would give it a bit of a bit of TLC. But, Yeah, the other thing is to, so the wind is the, so one thing is the heat, but the wind is the next thing, because the wind is what just dries things out. So if there's some way that you can create a bit of a windbreak so that the wind doesn't whip through, that can make a difference. If, now, I don't know how this product works with ferns, I'm going to tell you. But with other plants, there is something called an antitranspirant that you can spray on the foliage of plants. And it's like sunscreen for plants. Now, it doesn't last. Now, I'm not sure how it goes with ferns. And if you were to try it on something like a fern, I would be doing a test spray on a little bit. It's a really handy product. Before I headed away for my time in Kimber, I was walking around any young, tender plants I had, squirting them with this so that they would cope with me being away. But you'd want to double check how it works on a fern. So always do a test patch, you know, for the future.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks. All the best, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Michelle, 1300 222 891. Congratulations to our magazine winners, Vicky in South Plympton and Robert in Whyalla. Christine is on the line from Fairview Park with a lemon tree question. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning, Dad. Good morning, Sophie. Long time listener. I love all your gardening advice. I try to follow it as much as I can. I've got a sublime in a pot, and I have tried to find out what the problem is. It has sort of like a brown speckle on the top of the leaf, and I see now that this brown speckle is appearing on the fruit. If I scrape the brown speckle, I think it's alive.
It is.
What is it, Dove?
Okay, it's called scale. Now, are you seeing ants crawling up your tree?
No. Now, I know what scale is, Soph. And
it's not that.
No, it's definitely not scale.
Okay, so it's on the midrib of the leaf?
It's on the whole of the leaf, not just the midriff. And it's on the fruit. It's on the fruit as well.
It's not a blackish, dirty sort of covering that if you wipe your finger, you can wipe it clean?
No. I took a photograph, but I didn't know how to send the photograph to you. It's hard to scrape it off.
Okay, because there are different types of scales. So there's the common sort of soft scales, and then there are other reddish scales. I'm going to suggest that you take a sample of the leaf, put it in a sealed plastic bag, and head along to Newman's. And Dan and his team up there, they'll be able to help you with what it is, because you obviously want to get it sorted. So, Christina, take a sample along to them.
Okay, and can I just ask one other question?
Absolutely.
Where is the best place for me to buy the base of the wicking beds? So you call them IPBs?
IBCs. Yeah. There are different people that sell them. So if you look on Marketplace, you'll often find where some people have had them for aquaponics setups. So you need, but the thing is, you need to get food grade ones.
Right.
So you don't want anything that's had Roundup or any sort of chemical in it. It must be food grade. And then there are lots of different ways of doing inserts in them to make your wicking bed. I have filmed a segment for Gardening Australia about the way that I make them now. I actually will probably be running a wicking bed workshop in the not too distant future. Because there are lots of different ways to make wicking beds from repurposed recycled materials. You can buy them. And if you're not handy, absolutely buying them is great. But then they're not necessarily cheap. And if you want a number, you know, that's a cost factor. So look on Marketplace. You'll often find people advertising them.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much.
All the best, Christina.
Bye-bye for now.
Thank you, Christina, and thank you to all of our callers this morning. Just a few texts to throw at you, Sophie Thompson. On lemons, Matthew from Gawler asks, what's the best time of year to transfer a lemon tree from a pot into the ground?
Ooh, okay. So you have to do it when the ground is warm. And by the time we get to March, it's cooling down. So actually, now would be great. You know, really from November, December, January, and into February is the best time now. But before you do, please go to Gardening Australia, type in into a search browser, Gardening Australia plus Ian Tolley plus citrus. And there's some great examples where Ian shows how he more or less bare roots citrus to plant them out and give them the best start.
On that, a texter here says, I highly recommend Drought Shield. I sprayed the tender new leaves of my dwarf lemon tree a couple of weeks ago. I forgot to shade the tree during yesterday's 40-degree heat, but the leaves survived, still bright green, healthy and not burnt at all. So there
absolutely.
You go.
Now, it's not organic, so you can't use it on your veggies. You can use it on your fruit trees when they're establishing. And, you know, it doesn't last forever, but it can be the saviour for young plants that have only just gone in.
That's fantastic. Now, coming back to the suggestion by a listener that there's a great Facebook page called the Australian Lawn Fanatics. I think a lot of people have gone out and joined up, including Matt from Angle Vale, who says over 112,000 members. What an information repository for lawn lovers. And coming back to the recommendation you made about Merlin Sheldrake's book, Entangled Life, which I'm sure a lot of people would love to read, this texter says, not enough credit is given to our Australian fungi author Alison, I'm going to get this wrong, Polio, P-O-U-L-I-O-T, who published, I don't know what that word is, it hasn't come through on spell correct, but a book about fungi 2 years before Sheldrake did. So there's another one to go
beautiful.
And look at.
And there
Allure of Fungi.
Okay, there are lots of fabulous books about it, you know, and really it's a world of life under the soil that we give no credit to, and it underpins everything.
It does, and that's what I always think whenever I look at the top and I worry about the top, I think, how's it all going underneath? Because the complex systems are just mind-blowing. Now, just quickly, Jordan at Golden Grove says, I have ants and bugs on my pumpkin flowers. Is this okay?
I just keep an eye on it. They're probably just harvesting a bit of nectar and pollen. So just watch it. As long as you've got bees coming in, and bear in mind when it gets really hot like it has been, bees don't like extreme heat. So now that it's cooling down, they'll be back out and about.
Oh, that's lovely. And Jordan goes on to say, have an amazing day in the garden. It's the best feeling. Well, I know Sophie agrees with that. Sophie Thompson, as always, a really fantastically fascinating 90 minutes of Saturday Talk Back Gardening. Looking forward to doing it all over again with you next weekend, where we've got Jamie McElwain coming into the studio to talk about the Harvest Garden Festival on the 14th and 15th of February, which is an Open Gardens SA initiative as well. So that will be lots of fun.
Absolutely. And great to have you back, Deb, and happy gardening to all our listeners.